Once again, the format today is going to be about 15 minutes of meditation, followed by a 30-minute talk demonstration. I'm going to give you a couple of techniques and also a couple of stories, followed by your questions. And feel free to put your questions in the chat box right now. And the more I know about what it is that you're dealing with and the challenges that you're trying to overcome, the better I can help you, the better I can give you specific recommendations for what to do and how to make yourself feel better and to become more resilient and strong. In the meantime, if you don't tell me anything, I'm just going to keep on rambling because I'm good at that. So, and if you are having a bad hair day and you would rather not show your face on the camera, that is totally cool. I am personally having another no hair day, so I hear you. However, if you do put your face in the camera, that makes it a little easier for me because that way I don't feel like I'm just talking to a dead screen here, which is weird. So I have at least one face. This is good. And if there are more, that's even better. So it's 11:02. I'm going to take, oh, look, actual humans. This is fantastic. And it's also a way for me to gauge your reactions and see how what I'm doing is working. If you suddenly grimace like that, it's like, oh, that was horrible and painful. Then I'm like, okay, don't do that again. Whereas if you're like, yes, woohoo, then I'm like, all right, we're on to something good here. So welcome all the people on the Facebook Live. We have a record crowd on Facebook Live today. It's 5 humans. This is amazing. So in a moment, I'm going to start the Wheel of Awareness Meditation. So this is something developed by Professor Dan Siegel of UCLA, and he is a neuropsychiatrist, and the man is amazing. I love his work. I love him. He's just awesome. His last book for adults is called Aware, and I highly recommend it. It has all of his meditation practices in there. It's kind of a summation of his life's work, which is pretty impressive stuff. So this Wheel of Awareness Meditation is kind of a culmination of all the stuff that he teaches. It's also kind of a greatest hits of all time of meditation. So it's a combination of a whole bunch of different meditation techniques. You smoosh them up together. It only takes about 15 minutes or so. And afterwards, for some strange reason, you feel like you can fly. Woohoo! So before we begin, as usual, give yourself a rating on the happiness scale and on the misery scale. So a 10 on the happiness scale is like, woo, I am amazing. Life is perfect. Everything is awesome, which is always true. And a 10 on the misery scale is down the dumps, not feeling so well. You know, a repo man just took my car. So whatever it is, just give yourself that rating. And remember that these two are separate pathways in your brain, and it's possible to have a high misery rating and a high happiness rating. So go ahead and give yourself a rating for both of those. And the idea is that you want to compare the before with the after when we're done with today's session. So give yourself that, write it down somewhere, or make a mental note, and then we can begin. So take a deep, oh yeah, and people on Facebook Live, don't worry about showing your face. When I say show your face, I'm saying it to the people on Zoom. You guys are perfect as you are already. So fantastic. So let's begin the meditation, the Wheel of Awareness. Take a deep breath and close your eyes. And the first part of the Wheel of Awareness, first of 5 parts, is we are going to put our attention upon the 5 senses. And the 5 senses, we begin with vision. And if you have your eyes closed, even with your eyes closed, you can see something. You can also have your eyes open in this, but I prefer to have my eyes closed, and I recommend that you do it that way. Because the whole notion of paying attention to what you're seeing with your eyes closed takes it out of the realm of objects and into the realm of pure sensation. And you can pay attention to what it is that's coming in through your visual sense. Notice the various colors. Notice the textures. Notice what happens when you look up. What happens when you look down. Maybe you're facing a window and there's a fair amount of light, so you see like this reddish background. Maybe you're in a dark room and it's mostly darker. Either way, just give your attention to what's coming in through your eyes. If your eyes are open, maybe notice all the things in your peripheral vision. the things you may not have noticed before. See all the things that you had not seen. Maybe see them with new eyes. And one last bit of focus on your visual sense as we now move to hearing, audition. Pay very close attention to the sounds in your environment. Obviously, you're listening to my voice. And maybe there's a fan in the background. And there's a certain sound of the blades moving through the air. Maybe there are street noises. Maybe those street noises are diminished over what they were just a few weeks ago. If you become very attentive, maybe you can start to notice the sound of your own breathing. The sound of air as it moves through your nostrils. If you become very, very attentive, maybe you can notice the sound of your own heartbeat. Imagine that your ears have become these huge microphones, and they're just absorbing all the sound from the environment. It's all coming in, and you notice it all, becoming hyper attentive. As we move on to the next sense, the sense of touch. Notice where your hands are right now and what it is that you are touching. Notice what the feeling is of your feet on the ground. The tactile sensation of your feet either on the floor, in socks, in shoes. Notice where your body is touching the seat you're in. All the points of your body that is experiencing touch. Go ahead and catalog them right now and feel them. Really tune into the feeling, the sensation of touch. Everywhere it's happening on your body. Where is your shirt touching your skin? Lower back, upper back, chest, arms. Notice the sensation of sleeves on your arms, pants or skirt on your legs. And notice that you hadn't noticed that before I brought that to your attention. As we gently move along to the next sense, the sense of smell, olfactory sense. And right now, you may not be experiencing a whole lot of smells in your environment. And guess what? That is a smell too. That baseline smell, pay attention to it. Or maybe you or a neighbor just cooked something. Or maybe you haven't showered in a couple of days. What is that smell? You can start to notice that too. Or maybe you just did shower and there is shampoo or soap or toothpaste somewhere in the environment that you can smell. Really slow down and notice all the smells in your environment. Very slowly bringing in the little molecules coming in and actually joining your body, binding to your olfactory epithelium. Smell becomes part of you. It's one of your most intimate senses. Focus your attention on that for another breath or two. As we move on to the sense of taste. Maybe you recently ate something. Maybe you haven't eaten in a while. Maybe you just brush your teeth. Whatever flavors you have in your mouth, go ahead and pay attention to that. The residue of a recent meal or snack. Or just the taste of your mouth without any food in it? What happens when you really focus on that sense of taste that you were not paying attention to just a few minutes ago? Really focus on that for the next breath or two. All the flavors, all the sensations. Like your tongue is now more alive and more electric than it was just a few minutes ago. Notice what it feels like to put your attention on that. As we move on now to the next part of the hub, to the next part of the wheel of awareness. And that is to scan your body for internal sensations. This is similar to what we just did, but now we're just going to go inside the body to feeling. Starting with the tip of your toes. Notice the sensation in your feet. Do you feel lightness, heaviness, or is it just a certain presence? What is the feeling inside your foot? Do you feel the circulation of blood? Do you feel the twitching of muscles? Whatever it is, imagine that your attention is a laser, and that laser is now focusing on that part of your body. As you scan your body upwards and come to your shins, the muscles of your shins, the calves, the bones inside, see if you can bring your attention all the way deep into every part of your lower leg. Notice what's happening there. Notice that there is feeling there. Little twitches of muscles as they're pushing your venous blood back up to your body, happening at an unconscious level. And when you pay attention to it, you start to notice that it's happening. As you bring the scan up to the level of your knees and then your thighs, very slowly, very gently, notice what's going on in there. Maybe there are issues with the knees. Maybe you're in a position where the knees aren't that comfortable. Pay attention to it without judgment. Just notice. Put your attention on that. As you move the scan up your thighs, these big muscles of your legs, the quadriceps in the front, hamstrings and buttocks, gluteus maximus in the back, there's so much feeling and sensation in them. When you choose to pay attention, so go ahead and notice what's going on in there. Notice the particular sensation of your butt being smooshed on your seat. And how that makes the stuff inside feel. As you move your attention up further to the area of your pelvis, your genitals, and all the internal organs in there. There's a lot of stuff going on, a lot of blood circulating, a lot of energy in there. So go ahead and give it your full attention. Notice what's happening. Is there tightness? Is there freedom? Is there tingliness? Is there the feeling of things moving around? Because as we come up from there, we start to get into the area of the abdomen. This is where your internal organs live. You may not think about them all day long, but they are there. They are serving you loyally and valiantly. Kidneys, liver, spleen, large intestine, small intestine, pancreas, Say hi to them and notice them. Notice all the sensations that are there right now. If you become really, really quiet, you can start to feel the movement of your intestines, which is happening all the time, outside of your attention mostly. Is there a tightness in there? Is there pain? Is there freedom? Is there warmth? Is there pain? What's going on there? Notice it all without judgment. And then move it up. Move your scan up. As you continue to pay very close attention to your internal sensations. Moving up to your lungs and your heart. Is the chest open or is it tight? What are the feelings you have around your pectoralis muscles, your neck muscles, your back muscles? What are you feeling? Notice it. Be fully present with it. As you move on up to the area of your head and shoulders, and also remember your arms. Scan the arms. Scan the muscles inside your hands, everything. Up to your deltoids. Maybe you worked out and you feel a little tingle or a little fatigue from the workout. Or maybe just now you're paying attention to, ooh, I have arms. They are alive. They have energy in them. Moving on up to the back of your neck, front of your neck, your face, and your head. Notice what's happening in there. Is there openness? Is there a sense of things being closed? Is there freedom? Are there funny sensations? Whatever it is, take note of it. Feel it without judgment. As we now move on to the next part of the wheel of awareness, which is about thoughts. As you focused on the sensation inside your head, maybe you start to notice your own thoughts. So go ahead and do that. And notice where they come from. Notice how these thoughts just pass through like a train. And then they just kind of leave of their own accord. With a very light touch, notice them. And then let them go. They're like meteors in the night sky. They come streaking through, and just as quickly, they can poof, vanish like that. Notice the thoughts, the direction they come from, and where they're going. The quality of these thoughts. Are they kind? Are they harsh? Are they just random ruminations? Whatever they are, you've now become a very good observer of yourself, so go ahead and observe those thoughts without taking them personally. Just let them be. Just thoughts. It's all they are. Appearing on the screen of your consciousness and then just as easily disappearing. It's as if your mind is a TV screen. And these thoughts are temporary programs being flashed on that screen. And they come and they go. And the TV screen, which is your consciousness, remains clear, broad, expansive. As you practice this idea of paying attention to things, noticing them and observing them, while not being attached to things. As we now move on to your relational sense, your sense of connectedness to other people, And first, imagine the inner circle of your friends and family, the people who are closest to you. Now, I don't know how many of those people are, but just imagine them standing around you in that first circle of friends and lovers and family. And feel as if there is a bond between you. Feel maybe a beam of light going between you that represents the bond between you. A little cylinder of light. It's connecting you to your inner circle of friends. And then make another circle around that of the next tier of friends and acquaintances and relations. Feel that bond moving from you to them. Maybe it's connecting at the level of the heart, maybe at the level of the belly, maybe at the level of the head, maybe all three. Imagine you have a bond from all three going to them. All three areas of your body connecting to them. As you feel that relatedness and express your gratitude for having this connection to them, then add the next layer, the next circle of people. The circle gets bigger and bigger as now you expand it to include all the friends of those people and maybe all the people in your city even. Notice how there is a bond that goes from you to all of them as well. And now take this opportunity to expand that bond beyond even your city to your state, to your country, the entire planet. So this bond, the circle of association, engulfs the entire planet. And from there, maybe have it include all sentient beings, not just the people, but also the deer, the antelopes, the trees, the grass, the fish, the bears, everything is included in your circle of connection, your circle of association, and by extension, your circle of compassion. Feel that connectedness. Feel it at the level of your heart or wherever else that you feel that. And finally, take that attention, take that arrow of attention that you've been placing on your senses, on your internal sensations, on your thoughts, and on your relationships. Now turn it back on you. Turn it back on your own consciousness. Put your attention upon your attention. By now you're very well practiced in directing your attention, so go ahead and do that. Allow your awareness to rest upon your awareness. And as you do that, notice how a certain clarity emerges, a certain expansiveness, a certain calm, a true silence. As if you are accessing your true self. Go ahead and reside in that for a minute or so, allowing your attention to dwell upon your consciousness. And as you do that, we'll gradually bring you back to the present time and place, noticing how you feel, noticing how you may be more energized than you were before, noticing how there's perhaps more space and freedom inside your head compared to 20 minutes ago. Count of three, allow your eyes to open. And dedicate this practice to whatever you want to dedicate it to. The universe, creation, express your gratitude, and come right on back here. All right. Whew. Fantastic. So that's a pretty good meditation then. It took about 23 minutes. And I did a slower version of it because I think that the wheel of awareness is a very useful meditation. And there are people who spend days just doing one of those. So if you go do a Vipassana meditation, then you will spend 10 days basically body scanning yourself, or at least a whole day doing it, right? You spend a whole day just paying attention to the feeling of air coming through your nostrils. So we're zipping through that stuff very quickly. At the same time, it's a very powerful meditation, like a 45-minute personal training session that gets a lot of stuff done. So I highly recommend that you use the Wheel of Awareness or any one component of it and incorporate it into your meditation practice. If you don't have a meditation practice, this is a great way to start because it's guided, so it doesn't feel like you're just sitting there doing nothing, which is one of the hardest things that humans can't do. And that way, you get initiated into this whole thing. And then after a while, you're like, oh, this feels kind of nice. Maybe I could just do it by myself without somebody yammering at me the whole time, which I highly recommend. I'm distracting myself as I'm talking, so I wish I weren't talking, but at the same time, I have to guide you. So, dems the brakes. Okay, good. So, fantastic. If you have questions, we have questions down in the chat box. This is fantastic. So, please go ahead and put them in the chat box, and then I will call upon you. So let's see what I got for you today. What do we have? Oh, yeah, we got some good stuff here. So I got a couple of practices. I got a story for you. Let's start with simple pranayama. So one of the most powerful aspects of yogic science and yogic practice is breath. Prana is the breath. It's the life force. And pranayama is the practice of that. And they have so many different kinds of pranayama. It's crazy. And you had these sages in India for hundreds of years figuring out what would happen if you breathed a certain way for a certain amount of time and what that would do to your physiology and to your mind. And we are grateful for them having figured this stuff out because now we don't have to. We can just use the practice. So today, I'm going to teach you a very simple kind of mind-clearing, mind-balancing practice. It's called alternate nostril breathing. So this is what we do. Go like this, make the hang loose sign. Apparently Indians came up with this first, who knew? Okay, so what we're gonna do now is we're going to use this to press this nostril and use this to press this nostril, okay? Alternately, that's what we have this for. And the way we start, so in pranayama, the breath starts with an exhale. So we're going to inhale completely. Then you go like this, and you exhale with a count of eight. So exhale very slowly. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It turns out this is challenging to do while talking at the same time. And then just leave it there at the bottom for a count of 1, 2, 3, 4, and then breathe in. Count of 8. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then boop, close it. Hold it for a count of 4. 1, 1,000, 2, 3, 4. Breathe out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay, so we're just going to do that again. Breathe in. 1, 2. Oh, sorry, I forgot to count bottom 4. 1, 2, 3, 4 with your lungs empty. Now bring it up. 8. Switch. Count of 4 and then bring it down. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Rest at the bottom for a count of 1, 2, 3, 4. Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight. Rest at the bottom. No, keep it there and breathe it in. Switch. And count of 4 and then breathe out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Stay there for count of 4. And then bring it up. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Hold the inhale, switch. And breathe out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Hold for a count of 4, lungs empty. And then breathe in. Slowly. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think you get the hang of it now. Hold for 4. And breathe out. Slowly. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Hold. And breathe out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I'm going to do 2 rounds now without instructions. Just do it like you learned it. One more round. Breathe in all the way, hold it for a count of 4, and then exhale with both nostrils to complete. Now, the way we learned this in yoga was that this is a balancing exercise. So you have the left, and you have the right, and you have all these different channels. And so you're balancing the energy in these channels. So I don't know how scientific that explanation is, but it feels pretty good and balancing to me. And that's what I want you to take home with you. And when you do this count, when you do this breath count, it just slows you down. It activates the vagus nerve because now you're taking super deep breaths. And in yogic practice, they say that the breath is the bridge between the conscious and the unconscious, because you can do it both consciously and unconsciously. When you're asleep at night, you're breathing unconsciously. However, right now, we applied our consciousness to the breath, and you were counting, you were holding, you were doing these switchy things. If you've never done that before, it may seem a little confusing, but it's actually pretty straightforward. You can get the hang of it. And when you do that, good things happen. You are basically integrating your brain. You're integrating the conscious and unconscious parts of your brain, activating the vagus nerve, and basically becoming a lot more aware of your breath, your surrounding, and calming your neurology down. How's that feel? How did that feel to you? Let me unmute you people. How does that practice feel?
Feels good.
Pretty cool, yeah. Pretty calming, yeah. Okay, so for example, one of the audience members said, "Hey, what do you do when you're triggered?" This doesn't take very long. You go, take a breather, a couple of minutes, and you're literally taking a breather. You do this, and it changes your physiology. It changes everything. It's also very energizing. I felt like I got warmer as I did this. So prana is life force, and if you move life force deliberately through your body, you will feel it. You'll get warmer. You'll feel tingly. It's good stuff. Okay, so let's see. We have a question here. So let me attend to the question first, or should I go to the story first? Let's do a quick story. So, because the story may answer the question. You never know. And what I want to talk about today is the universe, the one that we're living in, the only one we've got, is it a hostile place or a friendly place? Because right now, you've got this thing outside the door that's trying to kill us all, right? It's a virus, and it's already killed a whole bunch of people. It's probably gotten a few of your friends sick. Maybe you even got hit by it, right? So it seems pretty hostile. And then you turn on the TV, and there's war, and there's famine, and there's refugees, and there's a total jackass who basically wants to kill people and says, go drink bleach. So what the hell's going on here? Is this a friendly universe I live in? And, well, it's an interesting question. And we do the meditation because it gives you an opportunity to reorient your attention. Basically, your life is what you pay attention to, because there's a lot of stuff happening out there, but you only notice what you give your attention to. So when you do that Wheel of Awareness meditation, you realize, ah, you have choice. And as adults, we have this amazing skill. We have the choice. We have the opportunity to run our minds independent of circumstance, right? You can feel and think independently of circumstance. In fact, you do that every time you watch a movie, right? You choose to feel something else. Maybe it's Toy Story 4. Maybe it's Love Actually, whatever it is you're watching, but there's stuff out there and it's not hitting you. So let's get back to the story of hostile versus friendly universe. And this reminds me, for some reason, of X-ray crystallography. You're like, huh? X-ray crystallography? Yeah. Allow me to explain. So X-ray crystallography is super cool. And it is the basis of basically the entire machinery of modern biology and also, to a certain extent, pharmacology and medicine. Because X-ray crystallography is the way you can figure out the structure of small molecules like proteins. So you can't really see how a protein is folded. With an electron microscope, you can like see the ball, right? But it's just like looking at a tennis ball. It's like, well, how does this tennis ball work? What's inside? You can't see the inside, right? Can't see the structure. There could be anything in there. So in order to divine the structure of and function of proteins, it's important to be able to look at them, or non-protein molecules like DNA. So that's how the structure of DNA was figured out. It was by using X-ray crystallography. And the way it works is you hit these molecules with X-rays, right? And then a diffraction pattern appears. The X-rays bounce off of the various molecules, and then you have a photographic film in the background, and it shows the little dots of X-rays where they hit and where they got scattered. It's kind of like taking a big ball of mud and hitting it at, say, I don't know, a statue or something, and then there's a wall behind it, and there's a pattern that emerges, and from that, you're trying to figure out what the statue looks like. Hey, wait, this is not so easy. How do you do this? Well, it turns out ridiculously smart people specialize in X-ray crystallography. They spend a whole bunch of time with incredibly sophisticated mathematical tools and computers to figure out how shit works. But that part is kind of routine. If you're smart enough and you know how to use the tools, you can figure out the structure of a protein. The trickiest part of X-ray crystallography is to get that protein in crystal form. If you think about it, protein, crystal, what are you talking about, dude? Protein is basically steak. So we're asking you to crystallize steak. How do you crystallize steak? That's not easy. That's not even possible, right? If you put it in the fridge, it just freezes. That's not crystal steak. What you need is this protein in this extremely unusual form, which is a crystal of protein. Turns out you can do this to almost any protein if you're clever and you're lucky. So what they do, scientists, they take this little bit of protein, right? And they put it in this substance, this little drop of liquid called the mother liquor. That's what it's called, the mother liquor. And it may sound delicious, but it's probably poisonous. I would not recommend that you drink mother liquor, even under quarantine circumstances, lockdown at home. So what you want is you want this protein in this drop of mother liquor to be in exactly the right conditions such that the protein will crystallize. The thing is, you have no idea what those conditions are to start, right? And you're varying the pH, you're varying the salt concentration, humidity, temperature, all these other things in there, how much solvent there is, how much water there is. It's crazy. I mean, there's literally billions of different configurations of that one little droplet with a protein in it, and you just don't know which one's going to give you a protein. So it's as much art as it is science. And when you get that one condition in which your protein crystallized and you see that teeny little bit of crystal in there, you're like, hallelujah, that's amazing. How did that happen? I mean, it is almost miraculous because there are literally billions of different combinations. So you are like that protein molecule. And you are this incredibly unlikely thing to be created in the midst of space. Because if you think about it, space is mostly vacuum. If it's not vacuum, it's hydrogen. If it's not hydrogen, it's like helium. And then it's actually mostly dark matter. And there's not a whole lot of higher bits of matter like carbon and higher elements like carbon and oxygen that we're made of. So the fact that you exist at all is kind of unlikely. And yet you exist, because the Earth is just like that mother liquor that was the perfect conditions for you to arise. Think about it. 20 degrees centigrade, oxygen, gravity, no gravity, boom, we all fly off into the cosmos, which might be fun for a little while, but very quickly you like explode and evaporate, less fun. So somehow we're here, and you got these plants that are generating oxygen for you. I mean, the convergence of things such that your life is possible is unbelievably unlikely. So I will posit that the very fact that you exist at all means that the universe loves you. The universe has created exactly the right conditions for you to exist. And these are like one in five gazillion chances that you exist at all. And so I would like that to be the background of your existence. The fact that we exist at all is this unbelievable miracle. And, you know, there's also been 108 billion people who've ever lived on Earth, and most of them are dead. 101 billion of them are dead, and you're not. So that's pretty good too. So even though you may be under some pressure, even though you may be triggered by things, even though you may be in a household with people that sometimes you don't get along with, even though maybe somebody dropped you from your job, even though things are uncertain, I would like to present to you that the universe still loves you just by virtue of the fact that you are here. And the question is, what are you going to make of that? How are you going to convey that to other people around you? And we always have a choice to say, God damn it, where's my yacht? And the problem with that is once you get the yacht, you're like, well, yacht is good, but that guy's got a super yacht. Where's my super yacht? And gratitude is all about being fully present to what there is. And what there is, if you are conscious enough to make that question happen at all, what there is life. What there is your existence, which is a miracle upon miracles in this universe. And I don't care what you think, if you're having a bad hair day or you don't like the way your butt looks in certain pants or whatever it is, you are a once in a universe miracle. And that is incontrovertible. So run with that. See what that feels like. See how you see the world from this perspective and how that feels to you. It may be a slightly different version. And especially, you know, if you're in a tough situation, maybe hard to think that, oh, wow, this universe is actually not hostile. It's actually supporting me. But the fact of the matter is, it's supporting you 999,999,999,999 ways, and maybe one or two ways not supporting you. So the metaphor that I like to use is like, look, you look at Mount Everest, you can either see this majestic, amazing mountain, or you can see like the few empty oxygen tanks that people have left behind, right? So you get what you focus on. And I would focus on your majesty and the majesty of the universe and how you are one with it, and it has made you come here in this highly unlikely manner. Okay, good. So questions about that? Anybody doubting they're miraculous right now? No doubts? Yes? Okay, good. You're miraculous. So let's answer one of the questions here. When you are triggered, what coping tools are best to use to become more resilient? So great question from my Los Angeles neighbor here. And if you'd be willing to share your question publicly, then I can elaborate on that and address it directly, because I'm not quite sure how you're being triggered, what's triggering you, but we can work on that specific trigger and de-trigger it, because a trigger is learned. A trigger is learned. So when you were born, you didn't have that trigger. When you were 5 years old, you didn't have that trigger. But at a certain point, somebody you dated or somebody you were married to or somebody who was your parent said something, and something else was happening at the same time, and boom, now you got yourself a trigger, right? And the thing is, we tend to like our triggers because we think it's my trigger, right? I own it, therefore it's mine. Therefore it's, well, good or bad, it's still mine, right? This is why people stay in bad relationships, because they're stuck inside this cage, but it's my cage, damn it, and I know this cage, as opposed to the outside, which is uncertainty, and uncertainty is costly and expensive and dangerous, right? So if you are willing to go beyond the trigger, there are ways of dismantling the trigger. So Yes. Elisa, did you want to play with that? Yes, no, maybe?
Yes.
Okay, fantastic. So would you be willing to share with the audience what the trigger is, what the nature of the trigger is?
It's just triggered if I'm triggered by a person. And, you know, something happens between us and, you know, there's two different opinions. You know, I might think I'm right. They think that they're right. And it just, I get triggered by it. And I just lately have been saying, let's just agree to disagree because I just want to diffuse the situation. But after I get off the phone or in person, I'm triggered and I feel like my anxiety rising.
And great. Fantastic. So this is a great opportunity to use The Work by Byron Katie. So Byron Katie is a very powerful and simple tool that you can use to just dismantle all kinds of things like this because it goes deep into the nature of things. So let's work with this. So do you have a more specific version of the trigger? Like when person X says this, I feel this?
No, it's not specific. It's just different circumstances that happen throughout the week.
Mm. Okay, so the more specific it is, the better I can teach you what to do with it. I mean, it's like saying, you know, if you have a cut, if you tell me where the cut is, and I can direct the therapy towards the cut. If it's a more general thing, I may not be able to work with it, but I'll give you one of my triggers. How about that? So my trigger is, say, watching He Who Shall Not Be Named on TV giving a press conference and saying things like, yeah, you guys should put disinfectant in your veins or in your lungs. Okay, so yes, watching this guy makes my head want to explode. So that's the sentence we're going to work with. So-and-so says something and my head wants to explode.
Right.
So the work is a series of four questions. So the first question is it true? So I'm like, huh. So-and-so says something and my head wants to explode. Well, actually, my head really can explode. I don't have explosives in there. So it's probably not going to explode. It just feels a little uncomfortable. Okay, so we've already loosened the hold of this so-called fact a little bit as we move on to question number two. Question number two is, do you know it's true? Do you know for a fact that it's absolutely true? Watching a Trump press conference makes my head want to actually, no, I don't. That's not a fact. And frankly, there is no trigger from there. There's no like actual dynamite little fuse that connects from that into my head. And my head, we already established, cannot explode. So, okay, maybe it's not entirely true. And then we go to question number three, which is, how does that thought make you feel? And I go back there and I take myself back to that situation. I'm like, oh, that thought makes me feel tense. Brings up a little bit of anger, a lot of discomfort, just a lot of uncomfortable feelings. Okay, and then the fourth question says, who would you be without that thought? And I'm like, huh, I could just look at that press conference happening and see it as just a press conference. I mean, could be anybody, could be anywhere, could be any planet, and go, oh, look, there's a press conference and this monkey dancing around there saying nonsense. And that's it. Who would I be without that? I would be a person with greater equanimity, with greater peace, and go about my life and probably be more productive and more effective version of me. So you would do the same thing. You say, okay, is it true that this person triggers me by saying that? Do you know it's true for sure, 100% for a fact? Number three is, how does that make you feel having that thought? And number four is, who would you be without that? So did you run through it for yourself, Lisa?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I also did think of a specific case. It had nothing to do with me, but I got triggered and I wasn't even involved.
Yeah. Okay, good. So when you run through this procedure, these four steps, how does it feel afterwards?
Yeah, I feel a lot better.
Feel freer, huh? Yeah. And the thing is, the more you do it, the better you get at it. And also make sure you apply it to a specific thing. So it doesn't work if it's a general thing. Make it specific, because what we're doing is we're addressing particular patterns inside your mind. So this is why I call this work creative repatterning. So all the stuff that I'm teaching you is included in my course, which is called Happiness Engineering. And you're all welcome to apply to that if you wish. If you're called to incorporate this material into your life in the long run, then I encourage you to apply to the course, because look, I'm telling you a bunch of things and it's like a personal training session. You come here, you lift a couple of things, maybe you get sore, but one session is not going to get you necessarily fit, Right? This is something you want to have for life. Fitness is a condition for life that you do by continually training and keeping up the training. So the Happiness Engineering course is a 3-month course in which we go through various techniques and incorporate them into our lives such that we are those techniques. We are doing them all the time. We are automatically running the 4 questions in our mind. It's like, oh, wow, okay, I'm not being triggered anymore. Being triggered is optional. It's not like this person triggers me. Now you realize you have choice in the matter. Now you are the one who has the trigger, and you can just take the trigger and whoop, remove it such that you cannot be triggered again in that particular way. And there's also other techniques. So meditation, if it's not a regular part of your life, you go through a course like Happiness Engineering, and it will be, because after the end of 3 months of doing it regularly, it will be incorporated into who you are. And the course is not about learning a raft of techniques. It's about becoming the kind of person for whom these problems are no longer problems. You have become the kind of person who can kind of look on what's happening and realize, oh, wow, this is something that I can rise above because I have retrained my neurology to have different patterning such that I can be more resilient. So happinessengineering.com/apply, go there. If you feel like this is the kind of thing you want to really practice, and I mean, who doesn't want more happiness? This should be something that everybody wants to do. So
I have a question to what you just said.
Yes.
So
yes.
Trump actually made that statement. That didn't like bother you that maybe somebody on the news that's really not that educated might actually want to ingest Lysol?
Yeah. So exactly. So this kind of stuff can trigger me. And, you know, as a person to train as a scientist and a doctor, I'm like, what are you doing? This is ridiculous. But the thing is, me becoming worked up and angry doesn't help my cause or anybody else's, right? I can just as easily just look at it and say, okay, that's silly. What can I do about it? I can go and write an article about it. I can go and tell my friends about it. Or I can just realize, hey, you know, the people who are dumb enough to do that, I mean, you know, God bless them, but there's not much you can do. I don't have control over the entire world, right? But what I can do is I can do my part. Whereas if you're caught in anger, you will often behave in a reactive manner that's not necessarily productive. And anger is a useful emotion, don't get me wrong. And when it's directed in the right amount, at the right person, at the right time, it's a survival mechanism. That's why you have this emotion. That's why it's such a powerful emotion, right? But if I get angry at a TV screen, that doesn't do me any good or anybody, right? So this is why the Buddha said that anger is like the poison you drink to kill your enemy. That's not how poisons work, buddy. So I want to avoid the poison and take the lesson from it. It's like, okay, fool on TV telling people to do silly things, and then see what action I can take. And you know what? A lot of the time, there's not a whole lot of action you can take, which is probably why you should avoid news these days, because it just works you up, but doesn't give you a path of action. You already know what to do. You can stay home. You can help donate to personal protective equipment for people who need it. There's a lot of good you can do in those. You can reach out to your friends and support them. But most of the time, the news is just, you know, waves coming in the ocean, and you can get really dramatic about waves. Like, oh my God, that wave came in. Look, it's going to destroy that sandcastle. Ah, it's going to crash into the other wave receding back. This is terrible, right? Or you can just watch it as the world. Hi. You can just watch it as the world doing its thing, which is always what is happening. So that's why I recommend that we take one step back and use our consciousness towards more productive aims and towards expansion of the mind, towards expansion of the self, and as opposed to this contraction feeling, which you get when you get worked up about things. Does that make sense, Elisa?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Fantastic. Okay, good. So Greg asks, from Medellin, Colombia, is the Happiness Engineering course accompanied by any reference material such as your book? The Happiness Engineering course is going to be an online video course, so all the material will be available to you. You can go there. There is no book as of yet. It's all practices. And I figured that if this is the kind of stuff that I'm doing in the Happiness Engineering course, and these are hard to do in book form. I mean, if I'm telling you, take a deep breath and close your eyes, boom, book just vanished. You can't do that meditation no more. So it's better to do it via video, via audio. At the same time, there will be reference material that's written online, so you can go back to it whenever you need to. And yes, I accept the challenge of turning it into book form, which I will at some point. In the meantime, it's like food, right? There's the food version that is on your screen, which is useful and gets you salivating, but it's not all that nutritious. So we want the direct transmission of the material. And that is via video and sound. So good question. So these are great questions. So more questions at me about how to handle stuff. And once again, so that's the technique that I just showed you is called The Work by Byron Katie. And if you look that up online, she has all of it available for free. You could also sign up for her courses. She's amazing. She's great. I mean, she's gone through so much and she's taught so many people for so many years. She just has deep insight. And when you just being in her presence is elevating. I mean, there are people who are like that in this world. So Jack Kornfield is another one whose work I recommend unconditionally. Very good stuff, Jack Kornfield. And yeah, so he's at Spirit Rock. And I also recommend Insight LA, insightla.org, for the stuff that they do around meditation. Okay, these are great questions. So what else is going on, folks? What is on your mind? How can I be of assistance here to unravel things, make things a little easier, pain, feelings of self-negative talk. Fantastic. Okay, how to get rid of negative self-talk and moments of sadness triggered by current circumstances, other things, and replaced with constant happiness. Okay, so great question, a fantastic question. So I'm not quite sure what you mean by constant happiness, Alex. Thank you for sharing. And I'm not even sure if that's our goal here. Our goal is kind of more along the lines of contentment. And contentment is all about meta okay with the world. So the idea is, this happened, I'm cool with it. This other thing happened that isn't so great, I'm still cool with it. You don't necessarily get all worked up, right? So what you're doing is you're taking a step back and you're allowing thoughts and feelings to happen. And sometimes the thoughts and feelings can be very uncomfortable, right? Like you go online and you see like one of your friends is in day 11 of their COVID-19 infection and she's suffering. And it's like, oh my God, this is terrible. You call them and you feel horrible, right? So to be like constantly wee happy all the time and jumping through the fields, perhaps that's not the goal we're looking for here. But instead the idea is, can you feel that? Can you allow yourself to feel that and be comfortable with the idea that you can feel that? Can you allow yourself to lean into the sharp points of life and be okay with it? Because the more you do that, the better you get at dealing with whatever comes your way. So that expression is from Pema Chodron in her book, When Things Fall Apart, which I highly recommend because things are always falling apart, not just now. And the idea is allow yourself to lean into the sharp points of life. Allow yourself to feel the pain, because when you really feel something, eventually it goes away. No feeling lasts forever, as anybody who's ever been in love can attest to, because you're like, oh my God, this is great. And while it's happening, you feel like it's happening. It's going to be going on forever. Your brain wants you to feel that, because that's how you hook up with somebody and have kids and propagate the species. And then your brain's like, well, we're done here. Sorry. And then you're like, wait, what happened to my love? I was in love with this guy. So that stuff can go away. All of it goes away. So all feelings go away. And the more you're willing to meet that feeling head on and actually engage with it, the more quickly you can get rid of it. Now, as for current circumstances, moments of sadness and negative self-talk. So negative self-talk, you can apply the four steps that I just gave you for negative self-talk. Is it true? Do you know it's true? How does that thought make me feel? And who would I be without that? So if you keep on doing that, if you cycle through that, that will work. And you will eventually be like, okay. And eventually, and after a while, you start doing it a few times, you're like, oh, it's just one of those thoughts. You won't even bother. But right now, I want to give you a very specific technique to get rid of negative self-talk. And this is going to make your head spin. So here we go. Alex, can we unmute you here? Can you talk? Okay, good. So, and whoever has ever had negative self-talk, please feel free to participate in this with me right now. So take a deep breath and close your eyes, Alex. And I want you to listen to that negative self-talk and hear that voice and see where it's coming from. Can you see where it's coming from? Can you hear the voice, first of all? You can't hear the voice? Well, if there is no negative self-talk, then I can't really help you because you're already there. But okay, how about somebody else? Can you hear the negative self-talk? Yes, you suck. You're terrible. You're ugly and stupid. How'd you screw that up again? Oh my God, I can't believe it. Can you hear it? Yes. Yes. Can you hear it? Okay, good. So I'm getting big nods here from Allison. Allison, you want to play? Let's play. Okay, good. So can you, okay, close your eyes. Can you point to where you're hearing that sound from? Point. Okay, so around your head. Okay, it's over there. Okay, so it's, so if you were to have a sphere around your head, it's coming from like, point to it directly. And okay, good. So right there. Fantastic. Good. Open your eyes and look in the room and say out loud a couple of things like, you know, vase, table, whatever. Okay, I'm going to unmute you so I can hear you. All right, good. So say it out
loud. Blanket. Blanket, ball, pillow,
great,
mantle.
Fantastic, good. Good. So now what I want you to do is to close your eyes, okay? And imagine the voice of somebody that absolutely does not matter to you. Somebody, that person can say anything they want and it does not bug you. Now, I think of like a two-year-old. I'm like, oh, that's cute. He called me a poopy head. And doesn't really affect me. Or it could be some random passerby on the street or whatever it is, right? Somebody speaking in a foreign language, like, what the hell? Am I supposed to be insulted? Okay, whatever. Okay, so do you have that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Allison. Well, can you hear that? Okay, good. Point to where you hear that voice from. Point to it where it is in space. So interesting. So that's coming from over yonder, over there. Okay, now did I prompt her in any way that one voice should come from this place and the other voice should come from somewhere else? No. You just have this naturally encoded in your brain. So this is what I want you to do. Close your eyes. Okay. Imagine that this voice from the outside that is putting you down, right? This voice of negativity is coming from that space, place that you pointed out to, which is like over there somewhere, right? Imagine there's a megaphone and it's coming in through this megaphone, right? Now take that megaphone and really quickly, whoop, put it exactly in the other spot. So to the other side, so where you saw it coming, the mm-hmm. voice of the person that didn't matter at all, right? Okay, mm-hmm. good. Now take that megaphone, take that same sound that's coming from there and now make it really high pitched, like it's Donald Duck, like speed up and go, hey, terrible, I can't believe you screwed up. Oh my God, that's terrible. And now add some circus music to it. Make it utterly ridiculous. Okay, now, Allison, as you hear that voice of negativity saying, hey, you're not good enough. Hey, you really screwed up there. How does that make you feel?
Yeah, when I have it coming from there.
Yeah.
It minimizes it.
Yeah, it doesn't do it. You're smiling. You're smiling. I just told you you're a horrible person. You're like, ha, 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 whatever. Okay, so yeah. So the point is her whole physical demeanor shifted, right? And the way she processed that statement shifted. So you can do that. You can do that on your own. So anytime you have this negative voice, chances are nobody has ever asked you this question in your whole life. And this is why creative repatterning actually repatterns your brain. This is why this stuff is trippy as shit and it works. So what you do is you recognize that these thought structures have a certain structure inside your brain. And until somebody asks you what the structure is, you don't know what it is and you can't modify it. But once you do, you can take the location, you can change it, you can change the pitch, you can change the speed, you can add background music, and it just doesn't bug you nearly as much. How's that?
Really good.
Good. All right. Yes. So, and of course it works when you have something specific. So you imagine that negative voice, it says something like, ah, you're out of shape. Ah, you screwed that up. Ah, you can't get a job, whatever it is. And just whoop, flip it around, put it in the zone of, does not bother me. And guess what? You now have dominion over that. Okay, fantastic. These are great questions. And we have a question from Allison, amazingly. When I don't get worked up at work, my coworkers think that I don't care, but really, I'm just trying to stay calm. The company culture of stress feels really negative and is a hard balance to maintain these good practices that I have while in this work environment. Yes. Well, guess what? Here's the deal. You get to be the change you want to see in the world. So you either get to become like them or they get to become like you. And there's a story that Thich Nhat Hanh likes to tell a lot, which is that, you know, you had these tin boats coming from Vietnam full of refugees trying to go across the ocean, right? And these are people who are fleeing war. I mean, their lives are in danger. So they're packed, they don't have a lot of food, they're running out of water. It would be a very easy thing to panic there. But if even just one person became an epicenter of calm, everybody else kind of crystallized around that and they calmed down too, and they made the voyage safely. So imagine that you are in that tin boat in your company where it's like, bah! And the difference is that they're not under threat. There's nothing happening. You're not going to drown. You're not going to get picked up by the Coast Guard and sent back home. You're not going to get killed by the Viet Cong. So these are all fake threats. And this is what happens, right? So the whole purpose of happiness engineering is that we've got these ancient brains that evolved on the savannah to avoid predators and hunt in bands and be sharing hunter-gatherers. And now we're plopped in these modern environments. We got this evolutionary mismatch. So the stress system that we use to escape a charging lion, we're now using to escape our boss. And you can't escape that. That's going to be there all the time. You're using that same system to worry about your mortgage. You're using that same system to worry about your coworkers. And so you get chronic cortisol production, stress, and thereby suppression of immune system, thereby illness, thereby, you know, gaining weight, all kinds of stuff. So what you want to do is you want to become that epicenter of calm. And then you become unshakable and they start to change. Like, oh, Allison, how does she do that? Why can't I be more like her? Hey, Allison, what are you doing? Oh, I just went to the seminar by Dr. Ali. It's great. You should check it out. And yes, you should tell your friends about this. If this is good, I mean, look, I'm giving away like gold ingots here, people, and I've got 10 people listening. So tell people about this and they can go and download the recordings. They are free for the meantime and use these techniques. And remember, you're not doing it just for you. We are all nodes in these super interconnected networks of humanity and all the other animals too, all the other creatures on earth, all sentient beings. So when you do this stuff, it affects everyone. You're not doing it just for you. So that's how I get myself motivated. I'm like, oh, wow, I'm not doing it just for me. It's only so motivating to do it just for you. But when you realize that you have families of people who are going to be affected by this, then it becomes more real. Great questions. Oh, amazing. So you teach meditation at work. Well, guess what? You have the perfect vehicle for spreading the love. And note, and you know what? Take notes, like specific people. Notice what they do and notice what happens as they start to chill the fuck out. And then remind them and say, hey, look, on Tuesday you were like this, but today you seem a lot less reactive, a lot happier version of you. So just thought I'd bring that to your attention. They're like, ooh, cool. Okay, cool beans. All right, more questions. These are great questions. Yeah, the company culture of stress, that's tough. And being around a whole bunch of people like worked up, that is the easiest way to trigger yourself, which is why you just want to cultivate this thing called honey consciousness. So honey consciousness versus water consciousness. Behold, I have a bottle of water here. And if I shake it, it shakes. It gets all, you know, bubbly and frothy and, you know, it gets agitated. This is what agitated means literally. Okay. Now imagine if this were, instead of water, if it were honey, right? If I went like this, the honey wouldn't shift. It'd just stay honey. If I could go like this, still wouldn't shift. So what you're doing is by meditating, by identifying more with your consciousness rather than the stuff that flits around your consciousness, you get closer and closer to this notion of honey consciousness, which is less shakable, less perturbable, and just steadier. And when you do that, the honey spreads and makes everything sweeter. Oh my God, such a metaphor. Love it. Okay, good. Fantastic. Great questions. Keep on asking. I will stay here as long as you keep on asking questions. Otherwise, there you go. Yes, and in transcendental meditation, as Lisa says, you don't just do it for yourself. You're doing it for all sentient beings. And I want to also emphasize this whole notion of all sentient beings. So maybe I'll close with this. And this is a big thought that I want to take you home with. So you're at home and you're kind of locked in. And this organism has literally invaded your habitat. And so you can't go out because you're under threat. I mean, it's a predator basically, right? It's hunting for people and trying to lock you down, trying to basically kill you if you step out. And you probably feel some restriction. You probably feel some highly justified fear. And I want you guys to recognize and remember that we are the top predators on this planet. And this is how we've been making almost every other organism on the planet feel for millennia. So they have been feeling under threat. Their habitat has been invaded and destroyed. I mean, the virus can't destroy our homes, right? All it's doing is not letting us go to bars and party and go to work. But we have literally destroyed habitat. So when you cut down a tree, that's a couple of hundred birds that don't have a home anymore, right? When you invade the Amazon, you burn it so you can plant soybean to feed the pigs, and then you kill the pigs because they all got a virus. You are destroying nature. You are threatening the habitats. You're threatening the livelihoods of all these other animals. When you eat a fish, you killed that fish, right? So maybe this is an opportunity, that's a window for us to feel deep, deep compassion for all the animals that we've been threatening, all the habitats, all the creatures that we've been threatening for, you know, eons of human life, and to maybe tread more lightly once we're out of this and realize, wow, have I been a good steward of the earth? Have I been a good top predator? Because it's possible to be a good top predator. I mean, the world needs tigers, the world needs lions, and they cull the herd, and, you know, they allow vegetation to flourish, because if there's too many deers in Yellowstone Park without wolves, then the trees don't grow, and rivers, you know, they lose their paths because there's nothing to hold them in place. So you do need the top predators, but the thing the top predators do not do is they do not overkill, right? So they kill just as much as they need, because A, they don't got no fridge, so they got to eat what they got. So nature has tuned them such that predators do not engage in overkill. They kill what they can consume. So have we been doing that, or have we been overkilling? Have we been wasting 40% of our food, which is what the US does in the form of, you know, you go to the supermarket, everything's super duper fresh, because they toss half of the food the day before. You go to restaurants, half the food gets tossed away. So remember these things, and think about how you can tread more lightly and maybe even adopt a vegetarian diet after you leave, because that is one way in which we can tread much more lightly on planet Earth and keep it safe. Because you know what? It bears directly upon your health. The next pandemic is going to be antibiotic resistance bacteria. And that stuff comes, as this did, from animals being closely packed, livestock being closely packed, pigs and fowl, waterfowl and chickens and humans, when they are in proximity and tightly packed, you get these diseases. And when you have a lot of antibiotic consumption, then you get antibiotic resistant bacteria. So we are directly causing these things through our behavior. How can we change our behavior such that we can be less of an agent of pain and damage, not to the earth, but also to our own lives? Okay. Great. Another question. Is there a way to maintain that sense of calm when your fight or flight response is triggered, such as when kids are loudly shouting, fighting, and feels immediate as though your loud, intense response is the only option? Wow. Okay. So I am eminently unqualified to talk about anything having to do with kids, because I don't have kids, but I've been a kid. Does that count? No, it does not count. It's kind of like being a doctor. It's like people say, oh, I go to the doctor, so I know what it's like being a doctor. My parents are doctors. No, you have no idea what it's like being a doctor. Don't go to med school. It's a silly idea. So same thing with parents, but it's too late. You've already had the kids. I can't say silly idea. So what do you do with the kids? And what I would say is this. The best piece of parental advice I've ever read is the idea of the good enough parent. And the idea somehow emerged in the past couple of decades that you have to be a perfect parent. You have to take your kid to swimming lessons and violin lessons and attend to their every need and be there and read them bedtime stories every night and make sure they go to bed exactly 8 o'clock after a bath. And I'm like, where did this shit come from? I mean, when my parents want to go out, they just pack me up with them, and I'd fall asleep in the corner of the party, and they pack me up back home, and everything was fine, right? And the point is that kids are super resilient, and their memories are only so-so. Right? So long as you're a good enough parent, so long as you have a direct line of communication with your kids such that they say something and you respond, right? It's been shown that kids that grow up in very, very traumatic environments, if they have even one source of secure attachment, they end up doing just fine. So these kids of yours, they probably have a lot more than just one source of secure attachment. They probably have you. They probably have other people. And you are there for them. You are a good enough parent. So in 10 years and 20 years, none of this is going to matter. So that's like the overarching attitude to take. It's like, this stuff happens. I mean, this is about getting worked up about every little wave in the ocean. Yeah, there's a lot of waves in the ocean. So kids are going to fight, I heard, like 20 times an hour when they're together. So that's just the way things are. And sure, you can impose, you know, your brand of justice, give timeouts or whatever. But the key thing is they are feeding off of you. Kids learn by imitation. So if your response to them is to get wigging out and worked up, then that's what they're going to learn. If your response is to go, oh, you did that again. Okay, go sit in the corner for a few minutes. Or if you're like, oh, well, you probably shouldn't do that. Oh, we don't do that here. And the other piece of advice that I really liked was, besides a good enough parent and modeling. So the two things here, be the good enough parent, not the perfect parent, and modeling. And the third one, oh, crap, did I just forget it? Good enough parent, modeling. Oh, yes. Yes, this is very important. So it doesn't work nearly as well to tell people to try to correct kids' behavior right there. What works really well is to give them an identity, to say, oh, we're not the kind of people who do that. No, we are sharers, okay? That's why we share our toys. We are the super calm people. We are, we're like magicians. We have a shield. We're the people of the shield. The stuff comes at us and, you know, we don't get worked up because that's the kind of people we are. When you give them that identity, it changes their brains. And that becomes a much more effective long-term tool for managing their own emotions. And you know what? We don't expect kids to manage their emotions. They're gonna go a little crazy. And so long as you are a meta okay with it, you are here, you're like, yep, they're being kids and that's cool. It's not personal. It's not fatal. They're not like lopping each other's heads off. Then you are allowed to be the good enough parent. Does that help? From someone who is eminently unqualified to dispense parental advice. All right. Thank you, April. All right, we still got a bunch of people here. Everybody's still here. Nobody's left. So what do you got? Questions. You all. So let's do a post. So in the beginning, you gave yourselves a rating of 1 to 10 on the misery scale and on the happiness scale. So how are you doing on that scale right now? Where are you on the happiness scale? Is it up or down? Happiness scale, up, down, up, down.
Up.
Up, up. All right. Feeling better. Misery scale, up or down?
Down.
Down. Misery scale down. All right. Hallelujah. And look, just being with other people, seeing them interacting is already going to be useful for you. But if you do these things, if you do the meditation, if you do the breathing, if you do the, when you do the work, when you ask those questions, when you reprocess your emotions, when you move the negative sound to the place where it doesn't bother you as much, all this stuff works pretty well. And if you do them all together, then the meanies don't have a chance. It's the way it is. Okay, good. Let's see, more questions. Loudly shouting kids. Yes, the worst thing. And look, we are designed to be responsive to the cry of kids. It's a very deeply embedded thing. So it takes practice to just kind of pull back and say, hey, all is well, even though I'm hearing screams and shouts. I mean, I get worked up when I hear neighbors' kids' shouts. I'm like, oh, wow, what must be wrong? But most of the time, they're just being kids. So, okie dokie. More questions? If you don't have questions, we're about an hour and 20 minutes into it. So I will close this session. Thank you so much for attending. And please be those epicenters of light, be the light, spread the word. And if more people could benefit from this, please tell them about these. I'll have more of these next week. And if you are called to apply this stuff to your life in the long run and to actually be the kind of happy person that you've always wanted to be, and to be that kind of person who radiates out happiness, joy, equanimity, and just being the most thriving version of you, please go to happinessengineering.com/apply and apply for the happiness engineering. First group of folks is going to be just 20 people. You will get as the maximum amount of attention because future groups will be much bigger. So you guys would be the vanguard. You guys would be the explorers, the pioneers to blaze a trail for everybody else. So thank you for your attention and thank you for your practice of equanimity, and may all beings be happy and at peace and safe, especially you and asymptomatic. Don't forget that asymptomatic.
Thank you.
So thanks for making it. I'm you call.